Here's another edition of BayCare Health Systems podcast series, BayCare Health Chat with Melanie Cole.
Well, we've recently heard that there are new updated guidelines for blood pressure. Do you even know what blood pressure is or why it's so important that we know our numbers? Here to tell us about that today is Dr. Dan Sedano. He's board certified in cardiology at BayCare Health. Dr. Sedano, what's the prevalence and burden of hypertension or high blood pressure in this country? What's different about what we know about it now?
So that's a very, very good question. And with the most recent guideline updates, what we're now catching is previously people who were would not be diagnosed with hypertension are now being included in the newer guidelines, essentially with a lower cutoff of hypertension. So by way of most recent estimation, almost half the country would be labeled as having hypertension with our new guidelines. And it's very important because in many and all respects, it is a silent killer, with preferentially leading to stroke, but certainly heart attack, chronic kidney disease are also very prevalent when it comes to the long-term effects of having untreated hypertension. So pretty staggering numbers.
Dr. Sedano, in your opinion, is this a good thing? Are you glad they updated these guidelines and made it so that, you know, more people now are considered to have hypertension?
Excellent question. I will tell you, at first, my gut reaction was I was not happy about it at first. However, I then began to realize that this is actually a good thing. It's a good thing because it jives with what I practice anyway, which is lower is better. Lower cholesterols and lower blood pressures. And if I was treating diabetes, I'd be aiming for lower A1Cs and glucoses. So lower is better. At first, I was unhappy. I thought this isn't a good thing. But as time went on, over the months went on, I thought this is actually good because I can then be much more aggressive in my lowering of people's blood pressures and taking it from there. It does get challenging the older we get. So the older we get, it becomes a lot more of a challenge because now you're dealing with other things such as falls, passing out, things like that that can happen in older individuals when you have them on antihypertensive medication. So it does get tricky as it gets older, but when we're younger, yes, I'm in favor of the newer guidelines now.
Tell us about who is at risk for high blood pressure. And as someone who explains blood pressure to people every day in my profession, people don't always even know really what it is, Dr. Sedano. They don't know why it's important that we even know about blood pressure. So tell us a little bit, give us a little physiology lesson. What is blood pressure and who is at risk for hypertension?
Okay. So you have your systolic blood pressure. That's the top number. And the diastolic blood pressure, that's the bottom number. So pressure is pressure. That's the amount of pressure that is felt in the arterial system. The systolic pressure is the amount of pressure that the arteries feel after the heart contracts, okay? The diastolic blood pressure is the pressure that the arteries are under when the heart has relaxed, and that's the phase called diastole. So it's a measure of almost resistance, okay? So that's blood pressure in and of itself. How it's regulated is not through the major arteries like your aorta or your carotid artery itself, although there's receptors in there that can mitigate it, but the whole artery itself doesn't do it. It's rather done by specialized group of nerve fibers that can be found in the bulb of the carotid artery, the top of the aortic arch, the kidneys, and then, of course, these small resistance vessels, which are too small to be seen with the naked eye, need a microscope, and they're called arterioles. All those things regulate our blood pressure. Note, the heart doesn't regulate it, but it's primarily done through feedback mechanisms through the central nervous system. And the heart is just told to do what it's supposed to do. So that's how blood pressure, what it is, and how it's regulated by the body. Now, who is at risk? People who are at risk to develop hypertension are by and large those who are, in no order of importance here, overweight or obese, physically inactive, those who smoke, and those who have a genetic predisposition to hypertension, and also those who really just eat a very poor, high-fat, high-sodium diet, and most of those folks do tend to be overweight anyway. You take many of those risk factors together, and by and large, you'll find the hypertensive person. I can't underestimate the importance, though, of genetics. I've seen plenty of folk who take great care of themselves, but who happen to have hypertension. And genetics are the underlying reason as to why. We call that essential hypertension. Their genetics predispose them to it, and it is what it is. So we just need to mitigate that to the best of our ability with, obviously, lifestyle modification and, of course, pharmacotherapy. So hopefully I've answered the question.
You absolutely have. And so diagnosis, and I'd really like to get right into non-pharmacologic and medicational interventions for it. But when you're diagnosing it, we go to the doctor, we get our blood pressure checked. We go to, you know, the pharmacy and you can get it checked. And there's home kits people can use. When you diagnose it, is one time taking it and it's high that time? There's white coat hypertension. How do you know that somebody truly is hypertensive?
That's an excellent question. And no, it is not through a one-time measurement. Actually, it needs to be two separate measurements on different days. That's important. And so I feel that the best way to diagnose blood pressure is in the patient's own home, when you can eliminate the possibility of white coat hypertension, or possibly when they're sitting in the pharmacy for 10 minutes waiting for their medications, assuming they're not annoyed or upset, and taking your blood pressure there. The doctor's office is obviously great as well, assuming that they don't have white coat hypertension, and that can sometimes confound the ability to make an accurate diagnosis. I'll get back to that in a second, but the diagnosis relies on two separate measurements where the blood pressure is greater than 130 systolic over 80 diastolic. That is the diagnosis of hypertension. Whereas when I was in medical school, it was 140 over 90.
Yeah, me too. When I was in graduate school, that's what we were told. And as an exercise physiologist, I always, you know, we practiced and we took it. So the learning curve for taking it, not so much with the digital now, but was certainly a factor as well. Now speak about treatments. If you do determine that somebody has high blood pressure, what is the first line of defense? What are some non-medicational things that you really want people to double down on?
Okay. I would say, again, all these are equally weighted here, okay? So even though the first thing I'll mention is diet, that doesn't make it more important than exercise. But yes, cleaning up your diet in a tremendous way, all right? So sodium intake needs to be drastically reduced. If you're eating processed foods, canned soups, fast food, frying lots of things, eating out at restaurants a lot, all these type of things are going to increase the sodium load to a profound degree, okay, where people can be taking thousands upon thousands of milligrams of sodium per day. That's going to drastically increase your risk of having hypertension. So cleaning up the diet to a significant degree. Obviously, weight loss. The more weight we lose, and that's going to be done typically through caloric reduction or a healthier diet and exercise, weight loss is just as important. If you look at someone's BMI and they're 32, it's time to lose a lot of weight. If their BMIs are 22, no weight loss is required. And obviously, exercise, exercise, exercise. I can't emphasize that enough. So the more exercise we get, it is a tremendous vasodilator. It releases endorphins. There's a profound sense of relaxation after exercise therapy. Exercise is very important. So weight loss, exercise, cleaning up that diet are extraordinarily important.
Now tell us a little bit about the medications. We hear about all of these medications, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, diuretics, calcium channel blockers. The list goes on. What is their main goal? What are they intended to do to help lower our blood pressure?
So the intended goal is simply to lower blood pressure. That's the bottom line. Now, some have different mechanisms, and the mechanisms are what separates why certain medications are used, okay? So let's take, for instance, a class of medications called the ACE inhibitors. Wonderful medicines, great medicines. I can also add in the angiotensin receptor blockers. So ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers are both and work essentially the same way. One skips a mechanism. So what they do is they are very good vasodilators, but they also have an ability to protect the kidney. So in someone who has mild to moderate kidney disease and or diabetes mellitus, they have not only an ability to lower the blood pressure, but they decrease the amount of pressure in the kidneys. So the kidneys are injured to a lesser degree. The kidneys sense less of a pressure within those organs. So ACE inhibitors have a special set of mechanisms that can protect kidneys in the setting of hypertensive kidney disease or diabetes mellitus with proteinuria. Very important in those specific circumstances. You also have the calcium channel blockers. Calcium channel blockers are medications that relax those arterioles that we spoke about before. By relaxing the arterioles, they dilate. When they dilate, the pressure decreases. A medication that's used in that circumstance is it's called the dihydropyridine class of calcium channel blockers, with amlodipine and nifedipine being the two primary medications in that class. Very powerful. Those are first-line agents. Diuretics. The old adage goes, when I was back in medical school, and it still holds true today, you're not treating hypertension unless you start a diuretic. We should have folks on diuretics if we're going to really be optimizing their antihypertensive regimen. Diuretics help promote sodium loss. By promoting sodium loss, that decreases the amount of stretch in the arteries and arterioles. Very important to be on diuretics in the right patient population. Not everyone needs to. People can be well controlled without them. But if, here's the kicker, if you're not controlled on other medications, get them on a diuretic, because, again, you're not treating hypertension unless you get them on a diuretic. Very important to have them on diuretics. There's several that we use: hydrochlorothiazide, spironolactone, and furosemide. Those are the three main diuretics that we use when treating hypertension. Next, beta blockers. The trick with beta blockers is most of them don't work for blood pressure. They don't work well, I should say. It depends on which one you use. There are some powerful blood pressure lowering beta blockers that are what we call non-selective, meaning they'll inhibit every single receptor that adrenaline will go after. And by inhibiting every single receptor that adrenaline will go after, you can have some pretty good blood pressure lowering effects, such as labetalol. Carvedilol also comes to mind as well. They do a good job in lowering blood pressure. The mistake that some physicians make is by turning to medications such as atenolol or metoprolol or propranolol first. Those are excellent medications in congestive heart failure, arrhythmia, not good blood pressure lowering medications because they target a different receptor. So beta blockers are complicated. It depends on which one we use. There is one beta blocker that I turn to sometimes first line if it can go through their insurance company, because it has powerful vasodilating effects along with some of the effects of being a beta blocker, and that's Bistolic, a wonderful medication that has an ability to vasodilate, and it has some beta blocker properties as well. So of the beta blockers that I use to treat hypertension, Bistolic tends to be the only one, because it's once a day and it has some really good data behind it in terms of blood pressure lowering. So to review, the main classes of medications are diuretics, ACE inhibitors or angiotensin receptor blockers. They're both in the same class. Calcium channel blockers with dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers being the primary ones. And beta blockers with bistolic being the best blood pressure lowering medication we have that's not taken like 3 or 4 times a day. Those are your main classes. There are some other medications out there in people who are severely resistant that you use 4th, 5th, and even 6th line agents. Don't feel like I need to get into those unless you'd like me to. But your other classes, those 4 main classes are the main ones.
What a great educator you are, Dr. Sedano. That was excellent information, so clearly stated, and you made it so understandable. Those medications can be quite dizzying and confusing. Thank you for clearing that up. Wrap it up for us. Give us your best advice. What you would like the listeners to know about blood pressure, the new guidelines, why it's so important to take your medications as prescribed, to know your numbers, and to really double down on that exercise and diet to keep that blood pressure under great control.
Absolutely. The precept is lower the better. How low can you go? We all played that in grammar school. We played limbo. It's how low can you go? Lower is better. We love low. Low wins. So the new blood pressure guidelines target a lower blood pressure. Let's look at less than 120 over 80 as what we should be shooting for. And in order to keep that number or to get as close as humanly possible, let's make sure that we're eating healthy, eating simple, eating well, fresh fruits and vegetables, freshly prepared items. When we go out to eat, don't overeat. Take things home. Be responsible. Watch our calories. Know what's going in. Be healthy and exercise. We're supposed to be moving out and about in space. We're not meant to be watching phones and TVs and computers. Get out and about. Get to an exercise class or simply take in this insanely beautiful region of the country that we live in and use all of it to your advantage and getting out and about and absorbing that beautiful sunshine, keeping yourself moving about in space, and yes, getting your heart rate up if you can by exercising. And then, of course, if we do have hypertension and taking all that into account, please be vigilant about taking your medication. Know why you're taking your medication, and then just simply stick to the regimen and remember to aim low.
Wow. What a great segment. Dr. Sedano, you are just an excellent guest, a great interview. Thank you again for coming on with us and really sharing your expertise explaining blood pressure so well for us and why it's so important that we do all of these things that you've recommended. Thank you again. For more information on BayCare's Heart and Vascular Services and high blood pressure, please visit baycareheart.org. That's baycareheart.org. This is BayCare Health Chat. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks for tuning in.